Welcome to the Great Loop Radio podcast, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. I'm Kim Russo. I'm the director of AGLCA. Today we are going to continue our story of our loop sessions, and today we have some of our platinum loopers who actually just finished their third loop and have started their fourth already, so they're certainly going to be up there among the very top of the most looped people very soon. So we'll bring Insel and Kip into the discussion in just a minute. As always, I'd like to take a moment to recognize and thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes & Associates, Great Loop Yacht Sales, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, and Waterway Guide Media. As always, we encourage our listeners to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. And with the sponsor recognition complete, I'd like to officially welcome Insel Angus and Kip Rodecker to Great Loop Radio. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Kim.
Yeah, I'm excited about this discussion because I think there's several things that you've done that are a little bit unique. And now that you're on your fourth loop, certainly lots of stories to tell. But let's start off, just kind of tell us about yourselves and the boating experience you had prior to starting the Great Loop.
Mine going to be the fastest. I'm a retired nurse and also retired military. And I had absolutely no prior boating experience before our first loop. Maybe 1 hour of renting a little Catalina sailboat on San Diego, but I had none. I just needed something to do.
And how about you, Kip?
I grew up on Lake Minnetonka. I had my own boat when I was 12 years old. When I was 12, 13, I was, how do I say this diplomatically? I was driving the adults while they partied and bringing them home in the middle of the night. And I got called out of bed more than once at 1 a.m. to go get my parents to retrieve them in our cabin cruiser. So I've been running boats and dealing with interesting situations like that since I was a little kid. And I navigated a lot of the Mississippi River during that period of time while the owner was incapacitated. Again, I'll leave that gently. At 17 years old, I dropped out of school and I went into the United States Coast Guard because I didn't want to get drafted and go to Vietnam. I admit it. And it was a good fit for me. I was involved in search and rescue and law enforcement and aids to navigation in the Coast Guard. And then after that, I worked at Sierra Boat Company at Lake Tahoe, refinishing wooden boats, antique wooden boats, Hacker Craft and Chris Craft, those sort of things. And I had my own 18-foot Chris Craft wooden runabout. And I also had a really classy little Snipe sailboat with a beautiful mahogany deck. And then we were in Reno, Nevada, and I kind of missed boating. We both wound up retired, and I was doing some research to something to do besides sit on a couch and die. And I looked at traveling the Mississippi River, and I was doing the research on that and seeing very little south of Cairo that was of any interest whatsoever. And then I came across the AGLCA website, thankfully, and that was very intriguing, and I started shopping for a boat very soon after that. And I can go on and tell you from there about what boat we bought if you want me to, or I'll answer your next question.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you both for your service to our military. Very much appreciated. But yeah, go ahead and you know, you mentioned the interest in the Mississippi River, and you came upon the Great Loop as kind of an alternate experience. And what kind of sold you, both of you, on the idea of the Great Loop?
Well, the fact that a lot of people are doing it, and there's a communications thing, and there's a inter-cooperation thing. You're not, you know, playing Magellan here and doing it all by yourself. It's just such a well done presentation at the website, and all the information. It looked like something that I was very interested in pursuing.
We did go to a rendezvous to see what it is all about and what kind of boats are out there, and listening to people of what they're looking for and what they're doing, and that helped a lot too.
Yeah, we went to Wheeler just primarily for the boat crawl, and got some ideas, and we bought a 40-foot Chung Hwa aft cabin trawler, which was a boat that we could afford, and it had the Lehman engines in it, which I really liked. I really that was the best thing about that boat in retrospect was the Lehman's. I really enjoyed those simple engines. But we did the loop on that boat, and I wound up getting a knee replacement in Chicago. I had one knee that was one was already replaced, and the other one was, you know, sketchy, and it just blew out going up and down the stairs on that aft cabin trawler. So there was just too many steps on that boat for me. Mm-hmm. And there was a couple of things about that boat that weren't ideal. We sold that boat with a great degree of difficulty, but we did get that boat sold. And we tried RVing, and that did not pan out at all. And I got back on the internet and did research, and I found the Endeavor catamarans. And it was either an Endeavor or the 34-foot, PDQ.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw them both, and the Endeavor just seemed like the boat for us, and it's proven out to be such.
So tell us what it is about the Endeavor that attracted you and made it seem like the perfect looping boat.
I'm going to sound like Steve Russell, the boat broker now.
Yep.
this boat is just, for us, I'm saying just mm-hmm. for our purposes, this is the ideal loop boat, I think. It only draws 3.5 feet of water, and the running gear is protected. I knocked the props off that Chung Wah, mm-hmm. and that cost a lot of money. This boat, I've hammered it on a couple sandbars, and it hasn't burnt a bit. There's two kinds of people that do the loop. I'm sorry, I have to say this, but there's people that say that have been aground and people that are going to go aground. I mean, it's just a fact of life. You just have to really be careful and try to do it as gently as possible. Other than that, the boat has only got 14-foot air clearance, which is really handy here in Florida. We're in Boca Raton mm-hmm. right now. And, you know, we come to a 15-foot bridge. We just plow right under it while everybody else has to wait. The boat gets 2 miles to the gallon. It cruises very nicely at 7.5 knots at two miles per gallon. And it can do 18 knots if we need to. And I've had to use that from time to time. It's got a lot of room. It's got a walk-around queen bed. It's got a washer and dryer. On and on and on. It's just a great boat for us.
Yeah, this is all captain stuff. Now, for me, one of the things was a really big galley
mm-hmm.
where we both can be in there without elbowing each other. It has 2 guest rooms, you know, and we don't really need it, but one becomes the garage.
Of course.
Place, you know, mm-hmm. And that washer and dryer was really important to me. So that when we do go into a marina, I don't have to sit at the laundromat. We actually right. get to spend the time in the towns and stuff. Since we are anchoring a lot more, so galley is important for cooking. We've got a wide space where we can sit and we can see out and see the wonderful scenery that we go through.
Mm-hmm.
Better than we did on the Chung Wah. So those are the kind of things that I really enjoy on the Endeavor
and
rather than the other one.
Powered boat davits. It's marvelous to be able to just hit the buttons and the dinghy goes in the water rather than go crawl back window and risk my life. So I really enjoy the powered boat davits. So.
Yeah,
we have to use the dinghy every day because we've got a four-legged that refuses to utilize the boat.
Right.
He wants to go ashore twice a day, so we better go ashore twice a day or we'll be breakfast.
Yeah, and I want to talk more about the pet aboard. But a question I get from people a lot who are looking at catamarans as possible great loop boats is whether it's harder to find dockage. And when you do find dockage, is it more expensive for a catamaran? So what's been your experience with that?
This boat is 18.5 feet wide, and my experience has been that the majority of slips in marinas are 20 feet wide.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, just because you use the word catamaran, quite often it's a young lady, but whoever answers the phone immediately assumes catamaran's got to go on the T-head,
mm-hmm.
got to go on the dock, and that's fine too. I don't care. But I can think of not even a handful of situations where they had space available, but not for a catamaran. We've always been able to find space in a marina that had space.
Mm-hmm.
every once in a while, they don't understand that 18 and a half foot right means that a 19 foot slip might not be perfect because fenders don't really fit and stuff. Well, and then we usually say, no, we're not going to go in there. And they say, hold on. And they always find us another slip. They always do.
One time in Montreal, a guy tried to put us in an 18 foot wide space between the dock and another boat. He said, no, it'll fit. And I got in there and it was a force fit. And then I said, you know, this isn't going to happen here. And they found us another spot.
We're not on a catamaran, and we've had that happen a couple times where older marinas have, you know, some of the slips are a little bit more narrow. I think we've had two on our Great Loop and beyond that our 14 and a half foot beam cannot get into. So it's not just a catamaran problem. So obviously if you've only had it happen a couple times, it's not something that catamarans, at least not an Endeavor. If you're a wider catamaran, it might be a bigger issue.
And we've never had a marina say that we have to pay more because of our width. It's always just the length. It's always just the length.
Good to know, because I think that's one of the misconceptions for people who have catamarans. The other thing about cats, and on the Endeavor, probably not an issue, but did you do the Trent Severn or the Rideau Canal, which has some narrower locks?
Yep, both of them. Three times now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Twice in this boat.
The Rideau, was that the one that seemed a little narrow, but it plenty wide for us.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty wide. But you can't buddy up to too many other boats if you do that.
Right.
Yeah, there was a couple of flood control gates that were a little tight. But, I mean, what's tight? 25 feet probably. When you're going at 6 knots, that's tight. You've only got 3 feet on each side. So, no.
Yeah, we the Trent Severn's narrowest lock is 23 feet, the last lock, 23 feet wide. And when we were going through, there was it might have been an Endeavor cat. I don't recall, but there was a catamaran right before us that certainly fit. It was just a little tighter squeeze than many of us had through there, but certainly not a lock that you were going to have two boats side by side going through anyway, regardless of whether it was a catamaran or not. So, I know on the Rideau in particular can be a little bit shallow. I think they maintain it to 5 feet. So having a 3 foot draft is ideal for that.
Yeah. To answer your question, when you said there's a 23 foot wide lock, I that was news to me because obviously I didn't have a problem because I don't even remember that.
Yeah. So. Not an issue for you.
And the lock masters are 80% of the time, the lock masters are really good and knowledgeable. 20% of the time, maybe not so, but 80% of the time, they're really knowledgeable. And if there is a question, they ask you and they tell you, they might tell you where they want you rather than letting you pick your spot.
Right. That's great information. So tell us about your cruising preferences. And what I mean by that is, you know, how fast do you prefer to cruise? How many miles a day do you prefer to plan for? And, how frequently do you anchor versus marinas? Those types of things that have a big impact on how long it takes to do the loop and also how much it costs to do the loop.
Well, when we're traveling and trying to, you know, like get to the pig roast in New Baltimore, we may do 50 miles a day. But today we just traveled 14 miles. I saw this really nice anchorage. I said, let's just stop here. This is a good spot. So, a normal day for us, if you could average that out, I think 35, 40 miles is a comfortable cruising day for us.
Usually what we do to figure out where we're going to go next is in the short run for the next day, we look at what our anchorage is about 30 miles away, 30 nautical miles. Mm-hmm. And then we look for something a little closer and something a little bit further down in case that either the weather, the wind picks up and we need to hunker down sooner, or we don't like what we looked at initially and want to go a little bit further. In the long run, we kind of look and say, okay, we've got to get our mail, okay, because we get our meds and everything through the mail. So which marina do we want to be at approximately 10 days from now? Mm-hmm. And then we look at that. We see if they have a slip, and then we divide the distance, you know, we'll divide the distance between 10 days and that tells us where to go.
Yeah, those are great planning tips. I think that's going to be helpful for a lot of people. How fast do you like to cruise?
7.5 knots. And this boat at 1600 RPMs runs at about seven and a half knots, 8.5, 9 miles an hour.
And that's, is that the speed at which you get the 2 miles per gallon? Or is that kind of an average across all of your speeds?
Got these little four-cylinder Yanmars in it, 240 horse Yanmars. Great motors. Love them.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So let's talk about anchoring, because I know you said you anchor frequently, and we're going to jump into talking about the pet and what's required there. But how frequently do you anchor versus pull into a marina?
I'm going to answer that. She might not agree with me, but I think we anchor 5 out of 7 nights, mm-hmm. if not more.
Yeah. Every once in a while, we stay in the marina a little bit longer because we like the place, so we're doing things.
Yeah, we stayed in a place in Key West for 9 weeks. Mm-hmm. We got a good spot there. We spent, February and March in Key West. In Marathon. Then we mm-hmm. spent a week at the Key West just to spend some time in that town. But normally when we're just doing, like when we're traveling the loop, one or two nights a week is it. Because our endurance is about, it's a little over a week for water and for pump out. So we don't have to
and
do
laundry.
Anything and laundry. So that's really the criteria is when we start running out of clean underwear, we start looking for a marina.
Yeah. So, let's take a quick break. Oh, go ahead, Insel.
No, I just wanted to say that's a very big change from the first time when we did the loop. We spent a lot more time in marinas because we thought we needed to. You know, we weren't that comfortable yet.
No, we don't.
And now we just, we don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know you need
it. Yeah.
Right.
Let's take a break. Let's play a message from a sponsor. When we come back, I do want to talk a little bit more about what made you realize you didn't need to be at marinas and that you could enjoy the anchorages more. And then I want to talk about your furry friend that is aboard, because I think that is also something a lot of people are super curious about. So let's go ahead and take that break, and we'll be back in a moment. Our friends at Argo Navigation have created a free boating app that gives AGLCA boaters an easier way to plan their trip, navigate safely, and share information with fellow loopers. Argo has nautical chart coverage throughout North America, auto or manual routing, depths and tracks to avoid shallow water, trip details while en route, and a captain's log to save everything. You can also see other boaters, message them, and share experiences with in-app social features. Coming soon is a premium version with weather, wind, tides, offline charts, and more. Download the Argo Boating app on the App Store or Google Play.
Green Turtle Bay Marina and Resort has consistently been voted a must-stop by loopers. It has earned the coveted 5-anchor designation from Quimby's Cruising Guide. This full-service marina features over 450 slips. They are located at mile marker 31.5 on the scenic Cumberland River. Green Turtle Bay is a proud commander sponsor of AGLCA, so join them and find your waterway of life.
We're back on the Great Loop Radio podcast. Today, I am talking with Insel and Kip. They are platinum loopers, which means they've completed the loop more than one time. And in their case, that would be 3 times and have started the 4th. So we were just kind of chatting about your preference for anchorages. And I think it's really interesting that you started off your first loop doing a lot more marinas and then later realized, and I think it was your words, that you realized you didn't need to do that, that you could anchor. So what brought that shift in your thinking and made you realize that you could anchor more and that you enjoyed anchoring more?
Well, experience. I think we're getting better at being on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
We had to figure it out because we can't get more than 44 feet away from each other.
Right. And that is a small distance sometimes. But so
I think too is one of the things is that in the first loop, we were learning a lot still. Mm-hmm. And being in the marina is where you have the docktails and where you have the other loopers and stuff.
Right.
Now the support has improved so much. with just even something like Nebo messaging and putting it on the on your website or the Looper Facebook page. If you have a problem, there is always somebody there that can give you an answer and help you with it.
Yeah. You also mentioned the davits that you have, which make it easier to launch the dinghy. Anything else that you added to the boat that helped with making it more comfortable for anchoring, or anything that the Endeavor has that the first boat did not have that makes it more suitable for a frequent anchoring?
Oh, I've got a an electric windlass that forward and reverse, so I don't have to lower the anchor manually. I can lower it. And I also have got a real nice bridle setup, which makes the boat ride a lot nicer, I think, and more securely.
Right.
And learn.
Again, experience. I'm just more confident and comfortable with the anchoring with my ground tackle and my ability to anchor us securely. And we're getting better at using, I use Aquamats anchor alarm, so I can sleep better at night.
Skipper Bob, one of your sponsors, is very, very good in pointing out where there are anchorages where you can use with that are pet friendly. And I think both of us, but specifically me, have been getting a lot better with looking at Windy and the apps that show you where there is a good spot to anchor versus where you're out in the.
Well, let's talk about the dog, because it is not a small dog.
That's his picture up on the wall, if you can see it. I don't know.
I can, yes.
He's a Border Collie Blue Heeler. He weighs he's almost 65 pounds now. He's getting older. His metabolism is slowing down, and he doesn't get as much exercise as a Border Collie probably should get. But he's comfortable with it. He's really adapted to the boat. He's a great traveler. And when the anchor goes in the water, he's looking at me saying, okay, the dinghy's next, right? Let's go. And we go to the beach someplace.
So, and Insel mentioned you're getting better at, you know, finding pet-friendly anchorages. How much of a challenge is that? Because we do have so many loopers with dogs who would love to anchor a lot, but they do worry about getting the dog safely to shore.
I got to be diplomatic here. I look for boat ramps. In the state of Florida, I have been, I've had some unpleasant encounters with the locals. It's just this, I don't know if it's something to do with the water here in Florida or what, but they don't seem to, dogs aren't overly... I'm going to try to be careful what I say. I just I've had more trouble in Florida than anywhere else. Other than but
there are
normally,
a lot more no signs.
Yeah, a lot of no this, no that signs. No, just you can always find a beach or a place where you can land the dinghy where there's some woods and we always pick up after him, even in the wilderness, and we always have a way to dispose of what's left behind.
Every once in a while, we thought we had an anchorage and found out that it was just mud or mangroves. And then we just have to go a little bit further. And that's one of the reasons where I was said when we plan for the anchorages, we have an alternative already.
Boat ramps. Boat ramps have always got a dock. Boat ramps always got a dock and a parking lot and a fringe area and trash cans. So there you go. What do you need?
Yeah, and that's one of the greatest tips that I've probably ever heard about dogs aboard, is that, you know, boat ramps, exactly how you said it. And you can see them, you know, they're publicized, first of all, but you can also kind of find them on the waterway. So that's a great tip for those of you considering looping with your dogs and needing a place. You mentioned that your dog has been resistant to doing his business, or is it her? Him, right?
Him on the boat.
I mean, is that something you tried? Is it, you know, an old dog, new tricks issue that it was just not having it, or?
I tried all the usual things that are too disgusting to discuss, and none of them worked. The veterinarian told us the dog can go 36 hours.
48
hours, actually. He went 23 hours. We got to Tarpon Springs, and I thought he'd be crazy to get on the shore. And we went on shore and he sniffed around and he was just in absolutely no hurry to do anything. He was just fine. 23 hours. He was just fine. So
that's what people tell me. And I have, you know, I share that we have not looped with a dog. And I think dog owners just naturally worry about their pet when it's been that long. But from what they have told me that their vets told them, the dog will go before it will allow itself to be harmed by waiting that long. But so it's great to have somebody who has that actual experience with a 22-hour crossing, and the dog did fine.
Yeah, he was fine.
Yeah. So you obviously have lots of loop experience at this point. Three completed, fourth one underway. This is such a hard question when people ask it to me, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What are the best parts of the loop in your eyes? Everybody's is different. And, you know, it's a trip of highlights. So it's hard to pick a highlight from where there are so many. But if you could narrow down just a few of the best, what are some of the best things about the loop?
Well, one of the things that we get it asked all the time, too, and it's not a specific spot. It's the experience. Mm-hmm. It's learning something new every day, meeting new people every day. The camaraderie of the loopers. Mm-hmm. When you see the looper flag, you know you're going to have something in common. Actually have two things in common. You have boating in common, and you have traveling in common, and you have going along a specific route in common. You mm-hmm. know, highlights, too many to mention. But mm-hmm. I think the experience and being able to do something different every day, but not being on the clock, you can't buy that. It really is.
3 days ago, we ran into, I think it was Jolly Roger. Anybody, said, hey, how you doing? Last time we saw you was in Ontario.
So last June.
Yeah, last June. So there you go. It's really cool. We run into people we've met before quite often, and that's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now, on your fourth loop, are you still finding new things to discover?
Well, I got to be honest with you. I don't know if we're going to do the loop or if we're just going to explore the East Coast, but we're going to spend mm-hmm. more time gunkholing. We're going to spend probably at least a month in the Chesapeake and time in the Albemarle and just slow down and do some more side trips and just maybe just anchor in spots for 2-3 days at a time. Mm-hmm. And just kind of...
The anchorage we are at today is a brand new anchorage. Mm-hmm. Because we weren't in a hurry. One of the big differences that I always say is the first loop, we did the loop.
We marched around.
And now we're boating and we're going along the route of the loop. And that is a difference.
Much more relaxed, much less goal oriented just experience oriented this time, I think.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great way to put it. So now that you have all of that experience, what would you tell someone who is, looking back to when you were just getting started and were in the planning stages, and what would you tell people who are in that position and are trying to just get all their ducks in a row and get ready to go? What's your best advice for them?
I've been waiting for this one. And a lot of your experienced boaters are just going to chuckle and say, yeah, well, that's obvious. But my philosophy, I'm a procrastinator. Mm-hmm. And my philosophy is, if I think of, gee, I wonder if I should check those sea strainers, that means I should stop what I'm doing and go clean the sea strainers. Mm-hmm. If I think, gee, I should probably, do another engine room check. Like this morning, I found an alternator hanging loose, ready to flop off the engine because I did what I, it just kind of went through my mind. I wonder if I should, if you think you might want to do something, I have to just go and do it. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I know for a fact is there's always three things wrong with a boat, and I know about two of them. So real big on, I just beat the drum about preventive maintenance mm-hmm. and stay on top of things. You just can't let stuff go on a boat. You gotta stay on top of it. And then there's always mm-hmm. something to put.
My input is don't put it off. Do it, because there are places where I don't know if they're going to be around for 5 more years. Mm-hmm. And if you wait till you know everything, you're never going to do it. Yeah.
Don't overthink this thing. Just pull the trigger. Go.
I remember being scared to death of the locks. And after five locks, I was saying, where is it? Where is the danger? Where is the bad part? Because it's not rocket science. It's if you're able to look at and get a boat and get on the way, you will adapt to situations when something happens, and something will happen. and then you will adapt, and you will find out that you are a lot smarter than you think you are.
And this applies to relationships.
It's so true, though, right? Because if it was all easy, it wouldn't feel like such an accomplishment. So it's those times that you do have to figure out something and adapt that really makes it rewarding.
Well, I think we've grown. And yes. I'm 73 years old. It's about time I grow up. So
never.
I'm still waiting. No, it's just do it. You know, get some idea of what it is about and where your resources are. Mm-hmm. And then just do it.
Excellent. That is great advice. And that's a great message to leave us with. So we'll hold it there for today. Kip and Insel, thank you so much for being here and sharing. You know, I really think the way you told your story, we could almost see the transition from the first boat and the first days when you weren't this confident to where you're on your, you know, you've done completed three times and started the fourth and, you know, anchoring all the time. And it's just really neat to see that transition and that change in your perspective and your confidence. So thank you for sharing that with us. I think it's a great story.
Tim, thank you. Yeah. And Julie and your home port crew. You do a great job. And I was particularly impressed the way you got us all through that mess with the Illinois locks. Thank you.
Chicago was
You guys
amazing.
Are really going to bat for us. I appreciate you. Thank
you. Well, thank you. And that is why we're here. And it is our pleasure. We, you know, we get to work with the greatest people. The loopers as a whole, a collective group, are just the most fabulous group of people you can imagine. And you know that because you're out there. But I usually say, I think, you know, somebody who's super high strung and wants everything their way is going to opt out of the Great Loop pretty fast because they're not going to have a good time.
Right.
So that leaves us at AGLCA with just like this fascinating, fun, motivated group of people that we get to work with. So it's truly our pleasure. We love what we do here, and that's what we're here for. So thank you again. And thank you to everyone who's listened today. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Great Loop Radio podcast. Until then, safe cruising.